Right, so this is the Mountain Bike Podcast presented by GMBN, and this week it's an adventure podcast because we are right in the middle, or just the start of Adventure Week, so our themed week on GMBN. And I've got the two stars of our first two videos Adventure Week. We've got Henry Quinney, who did the Everesting.
Hello.
And Chris Opie, who did the Leadville 100. So I thought we'd, it's a good chance to chat about those things, how hard they were, how much of an adventure they were, and talk about things like this in general, what inspires you to do these things, etc. So let's start with Henry, Everesting.
Yeah.
What exactly is it?
So an Everest is where you climb the same vertical ascent as the highest point on Earth, Everest, 8,848 meters in one sitting on one bike ride.
Yeah.
So, you can't go pedal up Everest itself, but you have to do the accumulative same height. So you run a loop or you run a circuit or just up and down a hill. It kind of started off roadies doing it. So there used to be a real emphasis on going down the same way you went up, because they're just, doing it on a mountain bike's a bit different because, you would want to, it's not really common doing it on mountain bikes, but here we are. And, so I've kind of making up as I go in terms of the rules and the guidelines, but yeah, just make a loop of it. And I like to make it watertight. So I like to come down a downhill run and pedal up the access road, I guess.
So 8,800 meters is a huge amount of climbing. Mm-hmm. Like, if anyone doesn't work in meters and feet, that's almost 29,000 feet mm-hmm. in one sitting.
Do you want to hear a cool fact about Everest?
Go on.
This is actually pretty good. The guy, there was a Nepalese, I'm pretty sure it was Nepalese, geographer that worked out a really accurate way to measure the height of mountains, and he measured Everest, and it was bang on 29,000 feet, and he thought, no one's going to believe me, they think I'm going to round it up. So he added 2 feet. So the first recording of Everest was 29,002 feet. It grows a bit because of tectonic plates, but that was the height for years. But actually, he knew it was 29,000 feet on the nose.
Whoa.
But he didn't think anyone would believe him. And they go, you just rounded there, didn't you?
Isn't it? It's named after an Englishman that first discovered it,
I think.
Yeah,
Everest, his name was.
His
name wasn't even Everest. It was Everest.
That's my mistake.
Yeah.
So that is, I've never done anything like that. I think the most I've done in a day is 3,300. What about you, Chris?
Leadville's probably right up there. It's just under 4,000.
Yeah, that is a big day out, so I can't imagine. And this isn't the first time you've done this.
No. It's made a habit of it for some reason. Yeah. I love it, hey. I don't know why, a bit peculiar. But I think the difference between Leadville is, like, for me, saying, you're going to go sit on a bike and do 8,000, 9,000 metres climbing, whatever. Don't get me wrong, that's gnarly. But the thought of even racing like you did in Leadville for even a couple of hours puts the fear of God in me, I couldn't do it.
So I couldn't spend that long by myself riding up and down a hill.
Oh, that's the pleasure.
Whereas when you've got people elbow to elbow, you've got something to spur you on a little bit.
Yeah, I guess it depends how you define the satisfaction of it. Because for me, I'm always looking, say we're going along and I think, I always try and work out, time to amount of climb that climb has totally ascended. And I'm always kind of doing a running average. And say I'm an hour in and I've done 450 meters, which is normally what you want to hit sort of thing for that. I'll be like, that's basically 500 meters and that's basically 1,000 meters. And then I'm basically an eighth of the way. Do you know what I mean? It's constantly. So you haven't got a visual cue, but I've got so many, I've conditioned my mind so thoroughly now to think like that. Have a carrot in front of me.
Does it not demoralise you sometimes? I've just done it with Blake. We did a bikepacking trip, and I knew the one day was 1,700 metres, not massive climbing, but we'd done two big climbs, really big climbs, and I looked down and it's still saying 1,000 metres, and I'm like, oh my God, that's that's hard. How am I going to do? Do you ever feel like that?
What's the actual issue there? Do you think it's actually the amount you've got to do, or do you think it's anxiety manifested because of lack of control?
I'm sure it's definitely the mental side of it. It's not that my legs don't have 700
metres. Totally.
It's just
the
thing
The thing, there's two thoughts I always think. Firstly, I go to the classic, if you had a gun to your head, could you do it? Well, of course you could. That's absolutely fine. And the second thing is, are you anxious because you are genuinely questioning your capabilities? Or are you just wrestling with the lack of control? So I just embrace the fact that it doesn't matter and just accept it and just go, whatever's coming my way will be. But it's the anxiety that I find is the real thing that demoralises me. And it's the lack of control.
How long did it take?
It was a big old day. 21 hours start to finish, 19 and a half of riding. I was pretty strict on... The only time I really sat down was to get my elbow wrapped up.
You don't want to stop. You want to keep ticking away.
And it's amazing how, those 2 minutes, those 5 minutes can accumulate. And suddenly it's an extra hour. And
I once read a thing, you know, Mike Hall, the guy that used to do Tour Divide, did some crazy TCR, races. Yeah. Sadly got killed doing the Australian
Pacific Wheel Race, I think.
But I remember he won the Tour Divide, and I think his like strategy was basically spend as least amount of time possible getting food. So in a store he'd just go and grab stuff, boom. You say you lose a minute here, lose a minute there, and that's where the race, well, maybe it wasn't, but that's where he felt like he, you know, mentally, that's where it was won or lost. It's messing around, basically.
Yeah. The funny thing is, one time I was doing a road ride in New Zealand that was 510K. And at that point, you're limited in terms of battery life because you start in the dark and you finish in the dark. You don't want to take good lights. But I was also heavily addicted to this game. I think it's called like Motorbike Madness or something. And you have to complete a stage a day. Right. And I was like, oh my God, I'm having to choose between my two loves, actual bicycle riding and pretend motorbike riding. I was like, oh my God. So I pulled over in a cafe and completed this level. I was like, I've got to go.
But, you know, it sounded like you had problems with your elbow. And it's more just a case of being sat on the bike for so long, more than fatigue, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a case of the thing with my elbow was, it was a lot of, I didn't anticipate how much out of saddle climbing I was going to be doing.
Right.
And I do have an issue with it anyway. And it just aggravated it really, really bad. But yeah, it was a real just gnarly day, man.
What bike did you do it on?
On my Strive.
Which is probably not the bike most people would think of doing something like this on.
You're right. However, you know, you could do it, say I did it on like a, well, one, I think I'm really lucky to ride. It's a fantastic bike. Yeah. That's it for me. Done. I enjoy riding it. Cut and shut. But also, the second way I come at it is that, say if I had a really light bike, and say it was 2 kilograms lighter, 3 kilograms lighter, let's go crazy. It was super capable in terms of super efficient uphill and was enough to get me downhill. That might make it maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours shorter, which sounds amazing. But you're carrying that process of really hunting down your bike, for me, is a way for anxiety to manifest and to go on the hunt. And then you start to look for excuses. For me, I'd rather be like, oh, it takes an extra 2 hours, whatever. And I don't care. That's easy. That you don't have to carry that weight. And that will weigh more than any bike ever could.
Yeah.
Worrying about stuff. You know, you see it in people that do like endurance road cycling. They say, oh, well, I didn't have this right. You know, and it will cook you. If you're left with that thought for 20 hours, it will cook you. If you just go, I don't care to begin with. And that's actually looking at, you know, it's like the Denim Destroyer on World Cups.
Yeah, right.
I bet everyone in the pits is looking at him thinking, wow, he's free, man. I'm here thinking I need this, that, and the other. And he's just like, oh, yeah, I've got my phone in my pocket in case the cafe rings and I'm just going to smash some laps. That's freedom. That's a lot more inspiring to me.
I have seen that. Now you say it in racing before with people that, tend to look like they don't care at all about it and just crack on with it. And you do see it, or you hear about it with like these sporty warriors on the roadside that have to have the £10,000 Cervelo to do that.
Ooh.
And they will chase the faster wheels, the faster tyres all the time. And
So if it was me though, I want to get it over with as soon as possible and then try and explore every way of doing that. Like anything I do, even the way I talk half the time, I'm trying to do it as fast as possible, just naturally. Like for some reason it's in me.
But I mean, that's really fair. And if I had unlimited resources, or if someone said, you know, I mean, definitely you could go down that route. But for me, it's about, I just love riding bikes. And anything that's going to even diminish or that enjoyment slightly, and that is included hunting religiously for, like if I was to do an hour's cross country race, of course I want the lightest bike possible. I'm not decrying that. If it was competitive, it's not. It's about, for me, it's about the mental aspect and surrendering. Just give it up. Just say, oh, well, this would it be. And it's that acceptance that I find a lot of, it's like meditation. I find a lot of solace in that. And I'd much prefer just to say, oh, well, and just go do it. And that's just, I don't know.
I suppose we are talking about two different things here. It's a part of eventually, but Everest in is quite different to the level 100, which is a big race.
Yeah.
I've done it before. We'll get into level more in a second. But have you ever set yourself a goal, and this couldn't be, it doesn't have to be mental, maybe think, right, next week I'm going out, I'm going to do a big day. I'm going to get out there really early and I'm just going to ride. But I think I'm going to ride 150 kilometers or whatever, just a big day. And you get halfway through and think, actually, I'm not going to, giving up's not quite the right word, but today's not the day.
Not feeling it for
whatever. I mean, I have done that, not so often. Sometimes I feel like if I set myself a goal, I owe it to myself to do it. But occasionally I've been like, nah, done.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel that when, like in these two occasions, there are certain things, like you're there to do it, where, you know, giving up maybe isn't an option, but do you ever feel like that crossed your mind?
Not, for me, not at Leadville.
Yeah.
Like, I was so far away from home, obviously. Colorado is not around the corner. It's going to be a long time before I get the chance to do it again, I would imagine. Although I do kind of want to go back next year. So giving up, that was never going to happen. But I did have to tell myself, like, it's only 100 miles. Only. You can get through that. Like, you can manage 100 miles.
Yeah.
There were definitely dark moments. And some guy said to me at the top of the mountain, so the top of Columbine, it's 3,850 meters, I think. He said, whatever you're going through right now, you'll feel better at the bottom because it's the altitude.
Yeah, so let's get into Leadville. It's a 100-mile race. It's up high altitude in Colorado. It's a race that I think heard about first. I think Lance Armstrong did
when he got busted.
He started to ride mountain bikes and I started to pay a bit more attention. But that's brought it into my attention. But how was it?
It was amazing. Like, that's the best way of summing it up. The atmosphere was just phenomenal because there's this big build-up throughout the week. Where you've got all these stands, there's kind of like a carnival atmosphere in the town. It's almost like the whole town goes on holiday, I guess. Everyone's there in their camper vans and trucks and stuff. It's like a massive family festival in a way.
It's quite a small town, is it?
It's really small. I don't know how many people live there, but it was, I don't know what to compare it to. It's small. It's not a big place.
And there's just a big influx of people for this race.
It must have at least doubled the population.
Right.
That's what it looked like.
I've seen a picture, I think, of the High Street. I think maybe on the morning of the race, just flooded with people. It looks like an incredible atmosphere.
Like, you're trying to get to the start line, you're literally pushing people out of your way. You can't get through.
Why? And I did see a couple of road names on there. I saw Ted King as an old road racer. I think he was top 10. Howard Grotz won it in 6 hours and 19. He's from Durango, a place I've raced World Cups in. That's high altitude. I think it's got to probably help being used to that altitude, is it?
Yeah, definitely. I looked at getting a tent. And then, hang on, there's a long story here.
Yeah.
I set a goal. I'm 100% convinced I could do it in 7 hours. It took me 8 hours 14, so I may have missed the mark a little bit. But I was speaking to my old coach from when I was racing, and he said, you know, like the tent could take pretty much an hour off.
Wow.
So sleeping in an altitude tent, so a hyperbaric chamber for like 3 to 6 weeks before the event at a simulated altitude of 2,800, 3,000 meters.
Yeah, because you went up to, what, 3,800, did you say?
3,800, yeah.
And how high is Tetbury? Is that similar?
Tetbury is almost. like 5% of that height?
Yeah,
150 meters or something.
Yeah, those altitude tents are really interesting. I heard the French Federation were doing a lot in the cross country.
Really?
A lot of their training. And also I heard, you know, this is, you do care for the grapevine, so with an industrial amount of salt. But they were doing a lot, because they were doing a lot of altitude training, doing all their training in those environments. And then basically halfway through the season, they weren't maybe getting the results they wanted.
Mm.
And everyone was like, nope, outside, everyone outside. School's out.
I'm definitely no expert on this, but I've heard two trains of thought. You either do that or you show up at the last minute, because I've talked to people about Andorra World Cup.
Yes.
You either get there as soon as you can, 3 weeks early, or you show up the day before the race and you're in and out and do it.
Yeah, but, they are the best, the only two approaches. Like, if you go for a middle ground, then you get the best of neither. The only thing I'll say, you come back from, so I spent a week before Leadville at altitude anyway, and then obviously the week then as well at altitude, came back, and it's like being given a third lung. Unbelievable.
Yes. I've done it, yeah.
So you feel so good on the bike again.
And did you feel, when you were descending down from that height, did you feel like you could just, like, you know, you're having to like chew on the air?
No, you know, I mean, the worst thing about that descent was I got held up by, so it's an out and back course, and there's a constant stream, because it's quite far to the front, there's a constant stream of guys coming up the mountain.
Oh yes.
And I was stuck behind someone going down, and I was just letting the brakes off. I think I say at some point in the video, I felt a bit of pressure to go downhill quite quickly wearing the GMB and jersey, having watched you guys.
Oh, mate.
So I stuck behind this guy, and I didn't realise just how painful it is when you have to ride the brakes because someone's not going that fast. Eventually he pulled over and I was able to go.
Yeah.
And it just releases all the pressure in your forearms. It's unreal.
So what the trail's like, from the pictures I've seen, it's just epic, sort of. It looks like the Wild West, but, you know, raised up to 3,000 metres and single track and fire roads and technical stuff at all?
No, so it's not really technical at all. In fact, I think there's something like 5 or 8 kilometres of single track on the entire route.
Right.
Or you do it twice, so it's like 10 to 16.
Yeah, okay.
Again, out and back. It's not technical. There are definitely places where you can imagine what the rainfall's like in the mountains, where it's washed out and you've got to pick a side of a gully.
Yeah.
But that's as technical as it gets. Just like line choice. It's not like one line is going to make a big difference, because at sometimes you've got two lines anyway.
What bike did you ride?
So I rode the Canyon Exceed, yeah, which I think you've seen in videos underneath Blake, possibly. I think he rode it with Nino, didn't he?
I can't remember what bike he, I think he did, yeah.
Little blue and black hardtail, yeah, which in, was pretty good fun.
In the dirty Kanto, I think there's that big conversation about aero bars. Are you allowed aero bars? Is that a thing?
Ooh. Yeah, and actually, no bar ends, if you remember them. People were sticking them on the inside of their brake levers. So it's close to where the bar starts to get bigger towards the clamp. They're like having them in there, and then they're just kind of these little tiny stubby ones. Mm. Wow. Weird.
Yeah.
You see some weird things at Leadville, actually, for bikes. And
I bet you do.
Yeah. So what, tell us about your background, Chris. You raced road. Did you race track as well?
Yeah. So I raced on the road and track. Started in 1997. So I've been doing it a little while. It was my career, my living from, well, in reality, from like 2007 onwards.
So how would this race compare to anything you raced on the road or track? Is it just a completely different physical side thing?
Yeah, so it's a lot longer. Like, I've never raced for 8.25 hours before. Right. The longest I would have done realistically in a race is around 6 hours. Like, that was quite common, 5 to 6, somewhere there.
Yeah, that's the road race.
On the road, yeah. And actually, we did a lot of short course road racing, so around the inner city circuits as well.
Crits.
And crits. They're just an hour.
And that's all about the power?
Yep. Okay. Just top end power, sprint power, that sort of thing.
So what did this feel like when you're at altitude trying to do 100 miles?
It was like putting your hands over your mouth and trying to breathe deep. Like, you can't get a good breath of air.
Did you ride to heart rate or power or anything like that? Or was it just you felt it?
Yeah. So after all the years of training, I've got a good background. I'm a little bit nerdy when it comes to the training side of stuff. Like, it's the side of stuff that I enjoyed. And I knew roughly what heart rate I could hold. So there's an event in the Cotswolds, actually, the Cotsduro, which is like a sort of gravel cross-country event. And I did that with some friends in June. We only did half of it because the hottest day of the year. And a lot of them only started cycling this year, and I convinced them it was flat and it's brutally hilly. Because we're around Painswick and everything like that.
Oh, yes.
And a few weeks later, I did it, and I did it in 4.5 hours flat at it. So 100K in 4.5 hours, which is about 2 hours faster than most people did it on the day. And I knew from that, like, what heart rate I thought I could hold and what effort, what that felt like. So I took that to Leadville like 4 weeks later, and knowing that I was going to aim for something, but then I was so much lower. So because I just couldn't, like,
heart rate
is suppressed quite a lot.
Well, how do you do that? Do you take stuff? I mean, you must take water with you, but
what do you mean take stuff?
I was going to say, because I'm on the motor, just like, this is going to get real awkward.
I mean, carry things. there must be feed stations out on the 100 miles.
That's the best bit about it. Okay. Oh, no, it's not the best bit, but it's a highlight.
So you must be in and out of those pretty quick. Or...
Yeah, I think in the entire event, I stopped for something like 4 minutes. I can't remember exactly now. It was really short. I went to the toilet once, neither we. There's a brilliant story behind that. And 2 feed stations where I had to just fill up my bottles. On the way back, though, I lost a bottle. I'd gone really wide across a couple of corners on the descent and just ended up in these big gullies.
I've seen videos of how
don't know how I managed that. And lost the bottle. So with like 30Ks to go, I reached down to get a drink. I was like, oh no.
I did that actually. At Sea Otter this year, Blake did this video where he raced his hardtail downhill and cross country.
Yeah.
And the cross country track at Sea Otter is amazing, but you go really far out into the wilderness. And I was chasing him with a GoPro to film it, and I could see his bottle bouncing around. And this was like, you know, 2 minutes into an hour and a half, 2 hour race. And I was like, and it fell out. And so I stopped and I had to grab his bottle. And I guess it's probably outside assistance. He might get disqualified for this.
it's going to be the pickle juice all over again with Catherine. Let's just cut it.
So I grabbed the bottle and had to chase him down. But I cut a few corners like and lobbed his bottle at him. I don't know what you do otherwise. You're sort of stuck.
Dehydrate.
Yeah. Two definitely different things. I mean, I've done some semi-adventurous thing. Well, actually, like, I think my favourite thing that I've done on these sort of things is Andes Pacifico, where you do have big days out, where you're out from like sunrise to sunset, and it's hard. You're hiker biking up crazy mountains and then bombing down as fast as you can. But what I really like about it is that you're really well looked after at the same time. At the end of the day, there's a lot of great food. There's a lot of great beer.
Yeah.
That's my style of adventure, I think. But also the bikepacking we've done. Have you guys ever done any bikepacking?
No, I've never. It looks quite cool.
Yeah, I've done a bit. I did a bit last summer. It was actually really cool. I went off just off a compass, and I just said, today I'm going to go north, and you can't get lost if you've got nowhere to go. And so if I took a right, then I'd take a left.
I like that. You can't get lost if you've got nowhere to go.
Yeah, well, I was going to all these cool places on World Cup races, and I was like, I don't really know the UK that well. So I was like, I know the Lake District is north, so I'm just going to find the Lake District.
And where did you start from?
Stratford-upon-Avon.
So went pretty much Midlands.
It was pretty cool. Went to the Lake District, and then I got to Morecambe and I saw the sea. And at that point, I was like, wait a minute. If I just go east, I'll get to the other sea. So then I just went east. No, then I got there and I thought, well, this is pretty cool. Maybe I'll go back to the other coast. Then I just went west, a bit like Forrest Gump. I got to North Wales and I got to Colwyn Bay and I thought, I'll just go south until I get South Wales. And then I just went south. Then I thought, I want to go home. And I just went west. So I went east, then went back across.
No way.
And that was it. And it was absolutely... Cool. When I got tired, I just jumped over a hedge and slipped in a bin bag pretty much.
No way.
It was... I smelt awful, but I just ate like a king and rode my bike for... I did 8 hours or 200K, whichever was... And then just jumped over a hedge and slept.
Oh, wow.
What bike's on? Road bike?
Roadie, yeah. Packed nice. Super light and just... It was... Oh, man, it was actually incredible. And then I did that and I thought, wow, that was cool. And then KG, well, the guy I was working with, wanted to do some testing in Fort Bill. And I was like, for the hassle of getting on a plane and all that stuff, going to the airport 2 hours early, I was like, it's going to be easier to ride. It's literally going to be easier to ride. And I was like, I'm not driving. It's too long to drive. So I just rode up to Fort Bill, which was about 800K, but did that over, I think, like 2.5 days. And
wow.
Just tanked through it. And that was super cool. The only problem was, you forget getting north, the midges on the west coast of Scotland.
Yeah, right.
So what I had to do was had to, like, it was horrible.
Oh, camping out, yeah.
And also you go to sleep in the dark and you don't realise where you wake up. So you wake up on like some like dog walking hotspot. I'm glad I said the second, but the walking word there. Anyway, and I was like just getting absolutely eaten by midges. Then I zipped up my bivy really tight. And then it wasn't that breathable and I woke up hyperventilating. Like, oh my God. Oh. So then I thought, I had a sleeping bag liner and I wore that from top down, so like my feet end over my head, and I could just breathe through that, but it smelt so bad. Oh, wow.
That's incredible.
It would have been easier to fly, I reckon.
Yeah, maybe looking back, but we live and we learn.
Yeah, I've never done that. I feel like that's something I would like to do. I used to do it quite often where I lived in the Midlands pretty much, and we'd have a beach day, but I'd meet the wife at the beach, so just ride wherever we're going. And that was my sort of version, a much smaller version of those things, where I'd be like, right, I know where I'm going. I don't necessarily need to map it out, but I'd get there and sometimes take 8 hours to ride on my road bike.
Yeah,
and lovely, man. I'd really enjoy it, but one day was always enough. So I've actually done John O'Groats to Land's End, if anyone doesn't know, if they're from America or whatever. It's the UK, so end to end, top to bottom.
I know when you did that, pretty cool.
Well, I did most of it.
Oh, here we go. You got an e-bike or something, I bet.
No, I did 6 days, maybe. I can't remember, actually.
Sick one.
And then I got home to Shropshire, so I missed a call a bit and flew to the first ever EWS. And my friends finished it off. But that was good. The Scotland part of that was brilliant. But for me, it was the sort of repetitive strain where my knees were killing me. Old injuries would really come out to play. And that's what I found spoiled it a little bit. I would have to take painkillers because it was so painful. It wasn't that, you know, the actual riding was great. It was the pain associated with it.
I always take a hockey ball with me. I don't know if this is the thing, because it's so hard. I remember on that second day up when I was going to the Lake District, I hadn't ridden a bike in about 6 months and I was just trying to get fitter as well. So I thought,
stop for a game of hockey.
Exactly. I've got my shin pads as well. And my IT bands were so tight, my kneecaps were visibly pulled to the outside.
Okay.
And I was like, I mean, it was really, honestly, it was a real hard day.
Oh.
And I just got the hockey ball and just like smeared it in Vaseline. I was like, ah! And honestly, it was super painful. But take a hockey ball with you if you go bikepacking. Wow. And anything that hurts, just attack it.
It's good because it loosens off all the sinewy tissue.
Yeah. It was really gnarly. But I think, I think something, when you go for like, say, 8 days, 10 days, you'll be fitter by the end, and you just got to hold on to that.
Yeah, I've got a friend of mine. I won't name names, but he was hoping he did the same friends went off to do Italy, top to toe on road bikes, and he was hoping to lose weight on this thing because it's such an epic thing. But he found, as most of us probably do, is you just eat so much food. There's no chance you're going to lose any weight doing that thing. You go to the Wetherspoons and you eat everything that's in Wetherspoons.
I'll have all of it.
It's like going to stage races as a bike rider as well. Like you think, oh, this is good, you know, use it for later in the season when I want to be a little bit leaner. But you just eat. Mm. Like there's food on tap all the time, so you just don't stop eating.
Yeah.
Have you ever found doing something really hard physically to be quite hard emotionally? I've done it where all of a sudden, I'd be at the end of a very hard day and find myself thinking about family or something. I'm being like almost like starting to cry a little bit. Mm. And it's just completely out of character for me. But it's because I'm just in this weird zone.
Mm.
You ever find that?
Yeah.
Me? Yeah. Well, big time.
I think more for me, it probably goes with like physical exertion and achievement in one. So if you've done something that's just so like you've pushed yourself harder than ever and you've achieved the goal that you set out to achieve, then like that's just quite overwhelming for me, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I guess for me, I think a lot about, you know, my riding to me is just one element of kind of a varied life. And I, you know, I think about roles a lot, you know, and something I have struggled with in the past is, remember, I wanted this ride real bad and I didn't quite get it for one reason or another. I think I was quite unlucky. I was trying to break the Land's End John O'Groats equivalent version of New Zealand. So right. it was a big ride. And I was very close to the end and I got a really bad infection that essentially started poisoning my blood. And my knee went grey, like real deep. It was like a saddle sore and it was, I mean, it was huge. And at the time, my mum was really ill and I'd basically drawn a parallel between, I wanted to suffer with her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not completing that ride still affects me to this day. I'm not even joking. Like, even when we did that Everest then, I said, like, my God, it's nice to complete something. Because, you know, I've done a lot of things that I've nearly done. Like, you know, on the road, I got invited to this thing called the Tour Southern, which is a big road ride in New Zealand. And I went into it with an injury, which was stupid. And I'd nearly did that. And I was known as the guy, when you're so passionate about something, as we all are with our riding, and you hope the success of it will define you, the failure can also define you.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how that transcends into different areas of your life. Mm. And it makes you analyze very in quite a cold objectivity. How you do, oh man, maybe I'm a failure as a partner to my wife. Maybe I'm a failure as a son to my mother. You know, and that, man, that hit me really hard. And that sometimes, you know, and doing stuff like that is, you know, you're just trying to ally yourselves with the qualities you quite like to call your own, you know? And it's difficult when you get it wrong.
I find I definitely used to think like that. And I'd use it as motivation, definitely. Like when I was a pro and I would be in the gym, I would think of something that I really wanted to happen or something maybe shallowly that I really wanted. Like I wanted that new car or I wanted that contract to be renewed. Mm-hmm. And I would think, if I don't finish this set or this squat, you know, that I won't get it. And if I do this and finish that set and that rep, I will get it. But I've definitely, I don't know if it's age or because I'm not playing anymore, but that's definitely faded. And now I feel like I can do these challenges. And it's up to me. I still feel like I want to do it, but I'm happily get to the point and say, that's all right, I don't have to do this anymore.
But you two, as speaking to you both, obviously you both have kids, do you feel that you became, you're kind of a different mentality towards your riding now you've got a kid?
I don't think it did.
Do you mean in terms of maybe...
people have asked me that. Yeah. I don't know if it's because I'm selfish anyway. I don't think it did. Yeah. I think it's just the age it got me. What about you, Chris?
I think it's the same. So I would probably quite honestly describe myself as selfish as well. But I also had kids for most of the second half of my career anyway. So I was just used to it. It was almost a motivator. But like it never stopped me going for gaps that I definitely shouldn't have gone for and things like that. So it was not jump gaps. That's...
Nice one, thanks for listening. You can get this on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Deezer, and on Audioboom. See you next week.